Welcome to the Pro Photographer Interview Series, episode number 17. This is Shamira Young, with you from Zenjoyable.com. Today's interview is awesome. We chat with Charlie Borland. He's been a commercial photographer for over 30 years. Based in Oregon, he shoots locally and nationally, and has traveled extensively for a wide range of clients, some of which include Xerox, Northwest Airlines, Fujitsu, Tektronix, Nike, and that's just to name a few, and I could go on. He has won numerous awards for his photography and received recognition for annual reports he has photographed. In our discussion today, Charlie tells us about his background, where he comes from, as well as how he got to where he is today. In addition, he gives us some tips on how to get our foot in the door as far as commercial photography is concerned. I definitely learned a lot, and I know you will too. Before we get to Charlie, I just want to give you a quick reminder to leave a review on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, wherever you're listening to this podcast, because it is in numerous places. Please, please leave an honest review. Let me know what you think, because I definitely want your input. Now, let's get to the interview. Hi, everybody. I'm hanging with Charlie Borland, professional photographer, and I am so excited to just chill and chat with him. I want to thank you, Charlie, for taking time out of your busy schedule to share some of your photography expertise with us.
Oh, well, thanks for the invitation. I'm pleased to be here and looking forward to chatting with you as well.
Excellent. And today we'll be focusing on commercial photography, which I'm really looking forward to because I personally have quite a bit to learn about that particular aspect of photography, and I'm sure our listeners do as well. So let's get right into it.
Okay, I'm ready.
Awesome. Well, first of all, give us an overview of yourself and your background. How did you end up where you are today as a photographer?
Well, I got started a long time ago, and of course, I'm going to have to divulge my age roughly here, but I've been a commercial photographer for, I think this is my 33rd year that I've been working full-time as a photographer. I attended Brooks Institute of Photography in Santa Barbara, California, back in the late 70s, and I've been a photographer pretty much every day since, and it's been an interesting journey. I've done quite a few different things during that time, and I always kind of look at the profession of photography as a long and winding road where you really never know where you're going to end up, but I guess life in general is that way too.
Definitely. And so tell us a little bit about, I guess, the type of photography that you do, because I know I mentioned you do commercial photography, but you do quite a bit of other stuff as well.
I do quite a bit of other stuff. In fact, I've always sort of tried to avoid the, being pigeonholed as an architecture photographer or a portrait photographer or anything like that. I like it all. I'm just as thrilled to be in the studio shooting a great portrait as I am to grab the camera and go to the rim of the Grand Canyon and photograph sunrise. I really enjoy it all. And there's a big difference between, you know, doing photography for clients who are going to pay you and doing photography for yourself. Mm-hmm. And I always sort of looked at landscape photography and outdoor photography, adventure photography, like rafting and that kind of thing, as sort of the getaway from the commercial part of photography. But at the same time, I made a lot of money in stock photography shooting all that outdoor stuff too. So Everything always kind of had a connection with my business, no matter what the subject was. And so from the commercial standpoint, it's been portrait. I had a 10-year run at doing a ton of annual reports, and really changes in the industry sort of changed that to a large degree. Mm-hmm. And whenever I wanted a break, I'd take off with, in the earlier days, the 4x5 view camera, and I'd go shoot outdoors, come back, and it might be a portrait session or a product session in the studio. And I did a ton of stock photography over the years. The 1990s, I think, was the heyday of stock photography when you could make a lot of money. And I made a lot of money doing it. And so long and winding road, definitely.
Excellent. And I'm looking at your website right now, borlandphoto.com, at your bio. And there's quite a list here of places that have used your photographs. I'm going to toot your horn for a second here.
Okay.
I'm seeing the National Geographic Adventure and Traveler, Outdoor Photographer, Women's Sports and Fitness, Newsweek, TV Guide. I mean, the list, Men's Health, it goes on and on. The New York Times, oh my goodness.
Yeah, quite a few. And I certainly can attribute to that success in getting published credits or on assignment for magazines with the 1990s, the heyday of stock photography, and lots of adventures being out, but also spending a lot of time drumming up assignments, you might say. In fact, I was once told by another photographer, the best assignments are the ones you create. And that might be going to a magazine and saying, I got an idea, and that still happens these days, but maybe not on such a grand scale anymore. And the second reason I can attribute that to at the time was, for the most part, really, really good stock photo agencies, and picking a stock photo agency that was so related to my niche in stock photography and doing a great job of, getting my work out there and getting it sold and published and so on. And kind of in between all of that was the clients that I went after for assignments.
And a little bit later in the interview, just to give you a heads up, I am going to ask you about getting how you get your foot in the door, because I think that is probably going to be one of the biggest questions that our listeners have. I mean, I'm still looking at your list. I need to click away from it because it's distracting. It's so amazing. I mean, Nike, Xerox, Blue Cross,
Yeah, old assignments.
Fujitsu, Northwest Airlines. Oh my goodness. Okay, but we will get back to getting your
Okay,
foot in the door.
sure.
Okay, second question, how would you describe your current style right now?
I think what I am very motivated doing right now is coming up with ideas and then executing them. And I realize that's a vague initial answer, but the Photoshop and the digital has just opened the doors like never before to getting an idea and being able to execute it for the most part. Compositing or, shooting one subject and blending it with another subject. And I just created for example, a global warming image to go with an article I wrote about trends in stock photography and the demand for images. And so I went into my files and I grabbed, a cracked earth image, and I grabbed a terrible stormy sky and some lightning, and I blended it all into one picture to basically go with that article. And so that really, really excites me from the standpoint of what I can create. Really, your imagination is the limit these days. All you got to do is come up with an idea, shoot the elements, and you can tell an amazing story with one photograph.
Absolutely.
And I also think that what I've also found myself really gravitating to is what I call happy snapping, which is basically, photographers these days spend a lot of time in the office. We all do. There's no way around it. And sometimes I just got to get out. I'll grab my point and shoot or my iPhone, and I will just walk around and happy snap. And sometimes I come up with some pretty amazing stuff. It's so good for the creative spirit and that sort of thing. So my current style, I think, is happy snapping a little bit, but also really taking time to develop an idea behind a photo. And I do a lot of teaching, and one of the things I tell my student is, don't go take pictures, build photographs. And I guess that's my philosophy about current style.
Excellent. And how do you get yourself inspired for a photo shoot, or if you're just going to go out for a day of happy snapping?
There are two different approaches. Usually, if I'm going out on an assignment, I have an idea of what the client wants. And so, inspired is on assignments, usually I spend more time thinking about making sure that I've got everything all lined up that needs to be lined up for the shoot, that I haven't overlooked any details. Not that I'm not paying attention to the creative aspect of what we're going to be doing, because that's crucial as well. But a lot of times you're responsible for more than just showing up with the camera. And so commercial photography really, and again, it depends on the subject. I get hired by businesses sometimes to come in and just photograph the staff. And that's very, I've done it 1,000 times. It's very simple. It's a simple setup. So I don't spend a lot of time getting psyched up for that, other than making sure that I didn't forget a reflector or something like that. The happy snapping and the or similar, even if I take my bag full of gear and I really want to go out and produce some great photography, that's more about discovery, and that's more about tuning into the environment, and that is incredibly inspiring, and almost like you get into a little zone when you're out with the camera. And so that's the value of working that way, is to just be free of everything else that's got going on in your life and explore and look around and create. And so I think just the process of doing that is very inspirational in itself.
Excellent. And you know, I've heard this mentioned time and time again, and it's so true that it's important to just get out there as far as happy snapping goes and practice. Mm-hmm. Practice your skill, because that's how you improve and that's how you get better.
And, exactly.
You know, I think there are times where maybe a week or even a month may go by where we don't get a chance to just go out, you know, and practice for fun. And I think really then our talent can suffer a little bit. And so I'm so glad that you mentioned that, you know, the aspect of happy snapping and how it's so important.
Absolutely. It's so invigorates the creative spirit and so on. And then you don't put a tremendous amount of effort with a ton of gear. In fact, in some of my teachings, this is what I do. I said, grab your smartphone or your point and shoot and nothing else, and go out and make the best possible photo you can. That way you're not hung up on which camera, which lens, tripod, flash. Just go compose something in the frame. And I mean, it's worked very well for inspiring me and helping my creative spirit, nurturing my creative spirit, and so on.
Definitely. And speaking of photography gear, let's talk about the tools of the trade a little bit. Tell us, what's your typical go-to gear for a photo shoot? Mm-hmm.
Well, it all depends on what I'm going to be doing. Mm-hmm. I have cases and cases of lights and stands and backgrounds and lighting booms and all kinds of stuff like that. I'll take them if I need them. I won't if I don't. And so I have everything I need for a pretty big location shoots or studio shoots as well. And then kind of the same thing with the camera gear. In the film days, I'd had a 4x5 camera system when that was required. And I had a Hasselblad system when that was required. And I had a 35mm system when that was required. Mm-hmm. And I also had a 6x7 format camera system when that was suitable. And so I used to have to pick which one I wanted for a specific job, because clients would tell you, I want a shot in 4x5 or 6x7. Mm-hmm. These days, digital, 35mm digital SLR, that's it. Mm-hmm. And a bag full of gear. I think what I'm enjoying even more about the change in gear is the wireless flash setups. Mm-hmm. So I have a case of those with triggers and all kinds of stuff, so I can go lighter, and I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Loading all cases of lights and everything in and out of my truck gets old, and so being able to go a little lighter, quicker, is always enjoyable. I still shoot mostly with Canon 35mm gear, and I got about 6 or 7 lenses mm-hmm. for various things, and then pack full of wireless flashes, but also mono lights and older Norman studio packs. But when I want to go out and happy snap, I take my iPhone or I take a little Nikon point and shoot. And they both suffice perfectly for those situations.
And for the situations where you're doing a photo shoot for a commercial client, what would you say is your favorite accessory other than your camera?
The photo assistant. Let them carry it all. Okay. When it comes to camera gear, I think one of the most useful tools I've ever used was a color meter. And that's for going in, because I did so many annual reports with just horrible industrial lighting mixed with daylight and fluorescent stuff like that. The color meter really kept things on track. Mm-hmm. And you can deal with that in digital photography, but if you know how to use the color meter, you can save yourself a tremendous amount of time on the computer adjusting color. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. in the film days, you were kind of out of luck in a lot of ways if you didn't calculate the color correctly. So I think from a commercial shoot, that's probably one of the things that I always was so glad I had. Other than that, it would be normal things like light boxes and umbrellas and stands and strip lights and that sort of thing. But I think in today's digital area now, wireless triggering options with flashes is huge. And I use that all the time in a variety of different ways as well.
Mm-hmm. And you touched on the editing that we do in Lightroom and Photoshop, just the different software out there. Can you describe to us what your post-process workflow is like as far as the mm-hmm. software that you use?
Sure, sure. If I'm shooting for a client, they usually get a either a CD right after the photo shoot, or I send by Dropbox a selection of low-resolution JPEGs just for them to pick the poses or pick whatever they like, depending on what type of shoot it was. They pick it out. Then I'll go back and I'll work on those images specifically. I do everything in Photoshop. Mm-hmm. I was a Lightroom user for quite a while, but this is not going to sit well with all the Lightroom fans. I mean, I am a Lightroom fan, but I just figured I already can do so much with Photoshop. I sort of quit using Lightroom. And Lightroom in the beginning was more for archiving, and that's when I got started anyway. And in the end, I really do everything in Photoshop because I'm so tuned into layers and all the various aspects of that as well. And so that's really just my go-to. I can open up Photoshop, get right in, get my job done. So I will, like I say, send the client some initials for viewing, mm-hmm. and then I use Bridge to sort and rate and that sort of thing. Then I open them up in Photoshop and I do the final work. And then I mentioned Dropbox and similar services before. I love that. I don't have to drive downtown to drop off a DVD to a client anymore. I can just send it all online. And so that's pretty much it. And then, of course, I do have clients who are very good at Photoshop. Art directors at ad agencies are very good at Photoshop. And oftentimes they just want to do the stuff themselves, as long as, you know, we're not talking serious multiple compositing type imagery.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really like asking that question because depending on the photographer that I'm speaking to, everyone, there are definite overlaps, but there are definite ways that photographers make it unique, you know? Some like Lightroom, some like Photoshop, some go between the two. And I know for myself, I started off as a Photoshop person. And then I started learning Lightroom just because when you come from a photo shoot and you've taken, you know, 500 photos or 1,000 photos, sometimes Lightroom can shorten that process a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And Lightroom, there's no doubt how valuable Lightroom is. And when I teach online, I get questions all the time from students going, well, why didn't you do it in Lightroom? Mm-hmm. Well, I like Photoshop better.
Yeah.
But you have to find what works for you.
Exactly.
Just like you can't tell somebody that Canon's better than Nikon or Nikon's better than Canon or Olympus or Sony or anything like that. Everybody has to find what works for them. And if Lightroom works for them, that's great. And I'm getting stuff from even some of my other students who are using other programs and like Aperture and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they're making it work for them. That's what matters. What works for you is what matters. It doesn't matter what somebody else basically says.
Exactly. To each his own,
you know,
really.
They all work.
Yes. And now I'm really interested in picking your brain about the nitty-gritty of commercial photography. I want to go back to that question that I alluded to earlier in the interview. I want to ask you, especially for the aspiring commercial photographers listening right now, how do you get your foot in the door with these clients when you're first starting out? Just to set a scenario, let's say I just graduated from college and I have some work, but not a strong portfolio. I'm kind of lacking connections. What would be the first thing that I would need to do?
Mm-hmm. I think the most important thing, especially for those that are starting out, is to find your voice. What is your voice? And we see we read about it all the time. People fresh out of school or maybe even just a couple years out of school are having high-profile opportunities where the world is learning about them very quickly because they developed their voice and they figured out how to successfully tell the right people or the world about who they are and their vision and what they're doing. And the pathway to success, or I should say the pathway to being a higher-profile photographer, happens very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
While others who are phenomenal photographers don't ever quite grasp what's required to stand out in the crowd. And I can use this analogy for just about anything, especially like with blogging and, you know, have a blog and that sort of thing. But photographers, bloggers, creative people are all standing in a packed room, shoulder to shoulder, and everybody's yelling at the top of their lungs, and you want to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very difficult. You have to figure out a way to be heard. And that's really the fundamental thing that needs to happen, is figuring out how to do that. when you think you have something to offer to somebody, as in a client or an art director or something like that, you need to prove to them that what you have or what you can provide them is better than what person they've been using can provide them in one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
And how that happens, you know, it's in many ways the great mystery. Might be like the lottery a little bit. You did one thing right and boom, you stood out. But I can use some examples of myself. I was doing a series of my outdoor adventure photography, you know, really powerful kayaking, rafting, mountain biking shots that I would shoot mostly for stock, but also to employ creative techniques. And I did a big email blast one, or I'm not, direct mail blast one time. And boom, an ad agency I've never worked with calls me. And we shot a campaign for Camelback, which makes those hydrating backpacks. Then they called me up 6 months later and asked me to shoot a hotel. Well, yeah, no problem. Now I'm an architecture photographer. And that job went great. And then it was an industrial shoot after that. So I think the key is being diversified, having an expanded set of skills will help you stay a lot busier. But somehow, you've got to send the right thing to the right person at the right time to get a break. And so I think, again, keep working on that vision. Try something unique. Be inspired by others. Then figure out a way to get that work in front of the right audience, and things will happen.
And, you know, listening to your story, Charlie, it really sounds like you put yourself out there.
Yes, you have to.
You know, there's no way of getting around that. When you sent out your direct mail blast, you were initially, basically, I should say, contacting people you'd never spoke to before, taking a chance and just, you know, giving something a try.
And exactly.
I know so many talented people who, you know, extremely talented, gifted photography. But not just photography. I'm sure anyone can say this for any field where they know these people, where they're really good at what they do. They have trouble, you know, putting themselves out there.
Exactly.
But the benefits can be great. I know we talked to a past photographer. I think it was Elise Shively. She was telling me, now she's a young girl. I think she's 24, 25. She grew up around the Detroit area, same as myself. And she graduated about a year ago from college. And right now she's living in L.A., and she recently attended, what was the big award show? I think it was the Oscars. She was on the red carpet. She was one of the photographers on the red carpet taking these photos. And I mean, she's big, huge names.
Yeah.
And you know what she did? She just put herself out there. She focuses on concert photography. She'd go to whatever concert she could, take the best photos she could, and then just send it to anyone she could. And she eventually got connected and landed a full-time job. And now she's over there, you know, living the dream.
Exactly. That's exactly what you got to do. You can't, and you can't sit on your laurels, as they say. You can't do an ad campaign and, or I should say a direct mail campaign, blast it out, and then expect the phone to ring. It just doesn't work that way. And it's being consistent. If you're just, and you know, I admit I was one of those that just hated cold calling. Absolutely hated it. And I could come up with all kinds of excuses to not do it. But I still did it from time to time. But I would do it, pick a morning, okay, I'm cold calling in the morning. I would do it until I would step back because maybe somebody just said, you know, quit calling me or something like that. That would be devastating. And, and it's like, okay, quit. Go take pictures. Go do something to make yourself be happy, because then maybe a couple days later you're all inspired to call again. You just have to do it. You have to pound the pavement. But if you're going to do direct mail or email campaigns, you have to do it religiously. And I think it's one of the good things about doing series. Let's say you shoot street portraits. Well, make a series out of that. Don't do a street portrait 1 month and then next month a close-up of a tulip flower the next month. You got to show consistency and build a brand that this is what I specialize in. Because I can guarantee you, you get hired because of your specialty. And you build trust with that client to the point where they know you're going to deliver every time. They're going to start going out on a limb and giving you things that they haven't seen you do. And they're going to ask you, hey, can you shoot a hotel? Yeah, no problem. Let me send you some samples. I've already been doing it. But I haven't marketed to you that material because I knew you had Camelback. I wanted to work for Camelback. So I sent you these outdoor promos. So target marketing is very, very important.
And I'm so glad you mentioned that you have to stay consistent with it, because many people, they, you know, at the first sign of disapproval or being turned down, they kind of back off. They get discouraged. And you know, I've definitely been there myself. And as far as cold calling goes, I think that is one of the least favorite things among Absolutely. People as far as marketing themselves. But, you know, it's really important. I mean, really, cold calling, right. cold emailing, you have to put yourself out there. You right. can't count on people finding you.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I, my friend Brian Peterson, he, years and years and years ago, he was really doing the biggest annual reports out there, UPS and other clients like that. And he would select a handful of them and create a campaign of direct mail postcards with catchy writing in them and great pictures, and he would relentlessly send this to them. And then he did, as people tell you, follow up with a call. Mm-hmm. And that's how he landed those big clients, was just developing a campaign that he knew was important to them. In fact, let me tell you one story real quick here. He'd done a coffee table book on Holland and beautiful tulip fields and all that sort of thing. And he got an idea one day, ran outside, shot some UPS trucks in different positions. And then this was kind of before Photoshop. He mm-hmm. went and made prints of those UPS trucks, cut them out, pasted them into his full page tulip field shots. Like there's a UPS truck going down a road with the tulip fields in the foreground. Oh. He shot that annual report for 10 years. He sent that coffee table book to the lead designer, and then he shot that annual report for at least 10 years.
Oh my goodness.
So it's being creative.
Yes.
And targeting his market.
Now, your personal opinion, would you say that direct mailing, is that still effective today? Is that something you do a lot of?
It is still effective. I haven't done a lot of it lately. Instead, I'm working more specifically going after a selection of clients and trying to work with them a little bit more specifically rather than, you know, the direct mail and the shotgun blast type approach. However, I did just print new cards because it's gotten so cheap. I don't have to print 1,500 of them only to use 250. I can order 250 now. Mm-hmm. So I'm loving that about the change in printing technology. But I think that there is still definitely room for direct mail. There's still definitely room for email campaigns that mm-hmm. are targeted, and there's still room for the old cold call, sales call, that type of thing. I think in the business in general, what works for one doesn't work for another. Some people hate getting email. Some people hate getting postcards. So you have to kind of sort of wiggle your way through that and figure out what is appreciated, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, find what's working. But I also believe that in this very crowded profession that you're better off to pick clients that you want to work for and figure out ways to go after them more than sending out 5,000 postcards from a mail list you bought. That might work. It has worked. It's worked for me. But at the same time, I think, again, pick who you really want to work for and go after them.
Mm-hmm. Now tell us, Charlie, what would you say is the most challenging aspect of commercial photography?
I think getting the business these days is without a doubt the biggest challenge. A lot of things have changed. I mentioned I did annual reports, not exclusively annual reports, but the bulk of my business for 10 years was annual reports. And then one very simple thing changed that. And that was if I remember it correctly, the New York Stock Exchange no longer required corporations to produce printed annual reports to be listed on the stock exchange.
Oh.
And a lot of them quit doing them. They started going with digital financial reporting and online annual reports.
Mm-hmm.
Not every company made that change, but a lot of them did. And a lot of them that I worked for quit doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's just one of those cycles in the business that you learn to adapt to.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that, you know, keeping yourself current and understanding of what's going on with the area that you want to work in, and then, you know, earning the business is without a doubt the toughest part. So that all gets back to then, well, how should you be marketing? How much social marketing should you be doing versus email or print marketing, and so on.
And, you know, it really is a learning process. And as you mentioned, what works for some may not work for others. And the important thing is to try things and test things and then measure things and find out what works the best for you. Mm-hmm. And that really leads us into our next segment. Let's talk about the lessons that you've learned personally over your 30 plus years of professional photography experience. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the most common mistake among professional photographers that you see them make or that you've made yourself?
Well, I think the short answer to that is getting into something over your head. For example, mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is I can remember having an assignment from a major sports apparel and shoe manufacturer, and I didn't ask enough questions in advance, and when that art director showed up at my studio, I'm ready to go. Mm-hmm. But she turned around and said, I want to do this technique. It's very cool. Well, it was a new technique that was starting to show up in various places, and I wasn't aware of it, and I didn't know how they were doing it. And we messed around for a couple hours before she gave up, and we just did more straight shots, mm-hmm. and I never heard from her again. Hmm. And so, you know, that's my fault for not asking her what she's looking to do, mm-hmm. specifically rather than generically, like, oh, we're going to shoot shoes and clothing. Well, I need to know more than that. And that's what I learned from it. I mm-hmm. should have asked more. And I think that's probably one of the most common things that's probably happening to people who are getting into the business as well. In fact, you can see this in forums online all the time. I'm shooting my first wedding. I have no idea what to do. Help.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yes. How do they get in that place in the first – how do they get there in the first place? You know, and that's the nature of this business is – I imagine by some, it's perceived as very easy to get into if you know how to push the shutter on your camera. And people who are been in the business much longer know it's vastly different from that. But, you know, I made that same mistake probably in my own way in the very beginning. And I know I did.
Well, you're not the only one. I did too.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been there. And it's something that you definitely learn from.
Right.
Definitely. Right. And I know just for me, the first wedding that I ever shot. I've mentioned this before with other photographers in the interview series, but it was the first one. I was nervous. I did a ton of research, and I knew that I didn't want to go in over my head because looking at those forums, I saw other photographers saying, I have, you know, my first wedding shoot coming up in a week. What do I do? You know, and I have this and no external lighting. And oh my goodness. So I got a whole, I had quite a bit, but I did rent some extra gear, and I hired another backup shooter, which, mm-hmm. you know, it was going to be a 7-8 hour gig. I did not want to do it by myself. And would you know that the morning of the wedding, I came down with the flu. Horrible case of the flu.
Yeah.
And I showed up. I did a pretty good job, I would say. But it felt so good to know that I had all of my ducks in a row. And mm-hmm. But, you know, I almost got in over my head. I came in very close. And then there have been lesser shoots after that where I did, you know, you go in over your head and you make that mistake, but you learn from it.
Right, exactly. And I get asked, because now I do a lot of teaching, I get asked all the time, you know, what, you know, I really want to get into doing architecture and real estate photography or portrait photography, you know, what would you recommend? And I say, take the time to take some classes or a workshop mm-hmm. or something like that. You know, if you're telling me you want to be an accountant and you went out and bought a calculator, I know that's not enough, and so do you. So prepare yourself. Because there's nothing better than leaving a photo shoot and having the client love you and tell you that they loved you rather than getting, you know, maybe an email 3 days later about why didn't you shoot this or why didn't you shoot that. So it's really on the photographer, no matter their experience, to prepare themselves for what they're going to be asked to do. And it's not brain science here. I mean, it's rocket science. I'll re-say that. It's not rocket science here. It's basically prepare yourself, because if you're going to be making money in photography, you're basically starting a business, and your business is going to serve a specific part of the market out there. And the more professional you are and the better you are, the more success you're going to have, whether it's a year down the road or 30 years down the road.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as a professional, your photos better look professional as well. There are so many people out here, you know, with DSLR cameras, and still as professionals, there's a difference, quite a big difference between a professional photo and an amateur photo. And I really think it's up to us to uphold that standard. And
exactly.
So this leads me to my next question for you. In your opinion, what makes a good photo stand out from just an average photo?
Well, I could break that into the fundamentals of a photograph, from lighting, composition, posing, positioning, that sort of thing. But I think from a more broader perspective, there are just photos that make people go, wow. Mm. And I wonder a lot of times, just what is that? What is that magic ingredient that makes the client go, wow? And I think, or actually the viewer, anybody. And I think it is the arrangement of how you've composed whatever you're photographing in your frame. I also think it's, how's the lighting playing up on that? And are you doing something that creates a lot of mood? And so it's pretty hard to nail, you know, one specific ingredient when so many ingredients of a great photograph play off of each other, and it just ends up into being a recipe for a very tasty photograph, for lack of a better description.
I like that description, actually. That's I can identify with that. Yeah, the different elements, definitely. The ingredients, they do work together. You know,
yeah.
Composition,
yeah.
Lighting. I mean, those are the things that really set us apart. And back to wedding photography, I know one thing that wedding photographers mention is that while they're at the shoot, you know, they'll have people standing next to them with their iPhones or whatever kinds of phones. And, you know, and they're taking photos that the photographer is supposed to be taking. And, you know, essentially they might have similar composition to yours, but you know, as the professional, you know about lighting, you know
right.
How to get that right. And you know about the dynamics of taking photos at different angles. And it's just, you know, even in those situations, when you compare your photo to Joe Schmo next to you with his little camera phone, I mean, there's going to be a big difference. And that's
absolutely
what makes us stand apart.
And there should be a big difference. And, you know, if it's a really good professional, then there will be a distinct difference. And I don't do weddings myself, but I have friends who do. And, you know, all the point and shoots can be a huge distraction to getting the job done.
Yes.
And so they all have their own ways of dealing with it. But, but yeah, you know, I mean, we are known for our last picture. So that's so important.
Now, definitely. Now, next, Charlie, tell us, what's one thing you wish you knew before you became a professional photographer?
I think there's not anything that I wish that I might have done differently.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have enjoyed being able to predict the future, that I'd no longer be shooting Ektachrome or, you know, Fujifilm or, you know, shooting a lot of Polaroids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it would have been nice to sort of predict that, because that was a really pretty tumultuous time for a lot of professional photographers out there, needing to basically rethink their craft totally.
Mm.
A lot of the photographers that are in the business now, their first camera was digital and their first processing was, you know, a Photoshop style program.
Mm-hmm.
But for the people, I spent 20 of my 30 years shooting film and trying to master and get that just right, and Polaroid, and learning how to light for film. And the digital process really forced, you know, sort of a rethinking of all of that, and even starting over in a lot of ways. You can light differently for digital than you could for film. And then, of course, the process of going through and learning how to properly process a photograph is hugely important now. And an example is, you look at nature photography, for example, on nature photography forums, and they are processed to make an orange sky almost glow in the dark. And, you know, it's a different art form today than it was with film. You had limitations with film, and you had a few tools to sort of rein in those limitations of film. But now that we've gone digital, there's, you know, it's almost a wild west, and I'm really thinking more of processing and, you know, that type of thing, to how people are perceiving what's making a good photograph compared to what made a good photograph in with the film days. So it's very interesting. And I think, you know, from a good photo, again, I think it's just something that really makes you go, wow. And I see it online. I spend a little bit of time every day just looking at Google Plus and see what people are doing.
Yeah, I agree. It's quite a difference from years ago versus today. And I think one of the most important things you can do besides going out in the field and taking practice shots, is also to make sure that you're educated to take advantage of the online resources that we have, or even just going into a class in person, a photography class. I mean, education is so important. And this leads me to our next question. Is there a particular photography resource, a class, a tool, a book, an online course, or even software that you'd recommend to our listeners today?
I think the greatest resource for learning photography, of course, is the internet now, without a doubt. However, everything on the internet needs to be taken with a grain of salt, because anybody who's talking about or teaching or presenting themselves as an authority on anything related to photography, in other words, it's sort of the Wild West. When I was learning photography before the internet days, I learned from people who had established careers, so you could always look up to them. The internet's made that a little bit different. Anybody can be established or can establish themselves as an authority on photography all over the place. And that's good and it's bad. Are you getting good advice? Well, that may be questionable in some situations. Are you learning anything from them? Well, that's just as important. So you have to also learn to take what you find online and compare it with what you find on the same thing somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And you have to make a judgment, you know, in that respect. So the internet, without a doubt, is the greatest tool out there, I think, for learning. I mean, that's where we're learning everything. That's where I see what other people are doing. As far as a great book, I think John Harrington's book on the business of photography for anybody aspiring to be professional is one of the best out there, without a doubt.
Mm.
It's a big, fat book, and I've only read through some of it on areas when it's a resource. It's more of an encyclopedia in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
You got a question about something? There is a chapter on it. It's really, really, really well done. And I have a lot of other books on lighting and, you know, things like that. But I think as far as a good business resource, John's book is very, very well done.
Excellent. I'll make sure to include that in the show notes for our listeners, for sure.
And I think software, boy, you know, I have a number of different things, but I'm a big fan of Photoshop, and that's pretty much where I sort of leave it. I don't have any. Oh, I'll tell you what. I did buy a plugin for Photoshop that I absolutely love called Mr. Retro, R-E-T-R-O, Mr. Retro.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
That is really, really fun.
Okay, I'll have to look into that, definitely.
For creating old-time photos.
Excellent. Mr. Retro. Okay.
Mr. Retro, correct.
Very cool. Excellent. Well, my final question, but definitely one of the most important. Tell us where we can find you as far as your website, any online courses or products or anything you want to mention today.
Yeah. I have a website that features my photography, and it's got a blog on it, and I keep most of my best images on there, borlandphoto.com.
Mm-hmm.
I offer online classes, which are over at greatphotographycourses.net. Just as it's spelled, greatphotographycourses, plural.net. And I also, as a side project that I really enjoy a lot, is I publish a blog called pronaturephotographer.com, which is kind of a web magazine. I've been interviewing legendary landscape photographer David Munch, who some say is the Ansel Adams of color photography.
Mm-hmm.
And we just did another interview that'll be posting on the site sometime this week.
Excellent.
And so I'll kind of keep my hands in a few different places, and so that's pretty much. Oh, and I got an ebook, Outdoor Flash Photography.
Say the name of the ebook one more time.
Yeah, Outdoor Flash Photography, and you can find that on iTunes, Google Play, or my website, borlandphoto.com. So
excellent. Well, thanks again, Charlie. You know, I really appreciate you just taking the time to sit down and let me pick your brain. I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, it was a pleasure. I enjoyed it, and happy to be involved.